All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper here for the next episode of the Mix Zone Women's Soccer Podcast. This is episode number 87, and of course, 1987 was a very big year for the U.S. Women's National Team. Half of the roster for the team that would go on to win the first Women's World Cup in 1991, half of those players debuted in 1987, including Mia Hamm, Joy Fawcett, Christine Lilly, and Karen Jennings. So, two discussions for today's episode. First, I chatted with Howler Magazine contributor Evan Davis about the CONCACAF Olympic qualifying semifinals and final. And we also looked ahead a little bit to the She Believes Cup that kicks off on March 3rd. Then KeeperNotes.com editor Hal Kaiser and I review the recently released NWSL schedule and discuss the possibility of Houston as the host for the 2016 NWSL final. Jen Cooper, the keeper here with Evan Davis, Howler Magazine contributor and one of my best WOSO buds. We're going to talk USA Canada. We're going to talk the Olympic qualifying tournament. Evan, can you believe it's over?
Yeah, actually, it's quite easy to believe it's over.
Well, you weren't here in Houston with Hal and I surviving. What was that? Four doubleheaders and then the championship match. It was so great yesterday. I was like, oh, I get to leave after one game. Wow.
I think that you guys and Sebastian Salazar clocked more hours with this tournament than anybody else.
Poor Sebastian. He had to call, three games by himself.
Yeah, and plus doing doubleheaders. What a horse that guy is. If you live in the Baltimore, D.C. area and you can listen to him regularly, call D.C. United games and other matches, do it, because he's a fantastic broadcaster.
Yeah, and he really takes it seriously. And him and Danielle and him and Kate. Yeah. I mean, I already thought Danielle and Kate were great analysts, but after this tournament, even more so, because not only do they have my level of scary stat recall, but their but their analysis, I mean, is just brilliant. So they are my role models for TV analysts.
Yeah, I mean, you're only puffing up Sebastian because he called you out by name on the air.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I pay him to call me out on air. Yeah,
yeah.
Clearly. Well, let's talk about first, the semifinals. So we had that doubleheader Friday. And, for U.S. fans, obviously, they're just interested in the U.S. game. But for general WOSO fans, I think Canada-Costa Rica, of course, was the more intriguing matchup, that Costa Rica had a shot.
They did. It's funny, we're talking about Costa Rica because the Copa America draw happened yesterday, and people seem to assume that the U.S. is guaranteed to go through because Costa Rica isn't that strong. Well, both the men's and women's programs have been growing by leaps and bounds over the last several years, and Costa Rica is certainly a force to be reckoned with. They gave Canada a show. They're not a particularly deep team at this point. But given the quality that we see on the field, especially from players like Shirley Cruz and Raquel Rodriguez, this is a program that's going to be hanging in the upper echelons of CONCACAF for years to come, especially given all the problems that the Mexican team has been dealing with head coach Leo Cuellar and some of his dubious player selection decisions and the fact that the Federation doesn't seem to be putting as much financial focus toward its women's program as it used to. It's giving an opportunity for Costa Rica to come up in that kind of third best position behind the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, and the coach talked about in the post-game press conference how, they played more games than they had ever before in preparation for a tournament like this. Usually they didn't have the opportunity to prepare, and that they've got more to look forward to with the Pan Am games, the Central American game. So, I hope they can keep the ball rolling, because I think the biggest challenge with the have-nots in CONCACAF, which is almost everyone but U.S. and Canada, and you can't even put USA and Canada on the same level, is when a tournament like this is over, the programs tend to go dark.
Yes, exactly. And that has so much to do with lack of funding, but
right.
Even when programs have some money, get some money together, because so many players are amateurs and what have you.
Right.
It's just hard to organize friendlies. So, yeah, that's huge that they were able to get as many games as they did leading up to this tournament.
And I love that she said in her post-game comment, you know, she said, I know that we weren't expected to win, but we've done the work and have earned our place in the conversation in CONCACAF. Mm-hmm. You know, and clearly, you know, going into that semifinal, there was no assumption that Canada would win. You saw that Canada had to start Christine Sinclair, who we knew was carrying a nagging injury, had to start Erin McLeod, again, with a nagging injury. And that's why, you know, she was held out of Sunday's game. But that was the most important night of this tournament, was the semifinals, because mm-hmm. if you don't win, there is no makeup game. There is no playoff game. Unlike the Women's World Cup, where mm-hmm. three made it and the fourth went into a playoff, this was two only, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to give a lot of credit to Costa Rica's perseverance. And a 3-1 scoreline against a very strong Canadian team, that, you know, that's, you need to commend the team for that. And you need to commend their tournament. Raquel Rodriguez was joint top scorer the whole tournament, 6 goals.
Right.
That's remarkable. I mean, Sky Blue fans are very fortunate that they're going to be able to see her in person in New Jersey 10 times this summer, because this is a very, very special player who has a lot of drive and a lot of ambition, and is going to be the face of that team for many years to come.
And I know this is kind of a tangent, but can you imagine Raquel Rodriguez and Natasha Kai together?
Well,
that's going to be interesting.
We have to keep this conversation focused to Olympic qualifying, but yeah. suffice it to say, Sky Blue home games are going to be a lot of fun.
And that Mexico-Costa Rica match, as we knew going into the tournament, we knew that would be the most exciting group game.
And it
was, especially with Maribel Dominguez having that golazo. It's a bicycle kick, but it's kind of something else too. I'm not sure how to describe it. That has to be nominated for the Puskas for this year.
Think about the journey that Maribel Dominguez has had in the last few years to be able to be playing at this kind of level at the age of 37.
Right.
Like, blows my mind.
Especially when this is not a program like the U.S., where there's been a steady salary and steady training and steady support, where, you know, sure, Shannon Box was playing at 37, but, you know, while she was off having a baby, she's on formal maternity leave with insurance and maternity pay. You know, no, Maribel has been hanging with this team, at least since 98. She scored the team's first ever World Cup goal in 99, first ever goal against the USA in 2000, has played in all three of the US Pro Leagues, WSA, WPS, and, you know, one season with NWSL. So I love that she's been able to continue. And part of me wanted Mexico to go on to the semifinals just for her.
Yeah, you have to think that she's probably not going to be continuing her career for much longer, especially since she's not really playing in any kind of serious professional club setting. So it is disappointing that Mexico dropped, didn't make it to that semifinal round. But if this is the end of the road for Maribel Dominguez, it's a great capstone, that goal.
Yeah, and that she's, you know, number two all time on the tournament scoring list, behind, of course, Christine Sinclair, both of them having played in every Olympic qualifying tournament since they started doing qualifying, you know, in 2004. So it's kind of, you know, an end of the road for two legends. I mean, who knows how long Sinclair will keep playing, but another 4 years from now, that might be a little tough.
Just let her beat Abby's goal record. That's all I'm asking for. That's another milestone of this tournament that Sinclair now passed Mia Hamm on the all-time international goals list. So she's now within, what, like 23 or something?
Sounds 23 sounds about right. The thing is, they don't – Canada doesn't play as many friendlies as the U.S.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she'll have the opportunity. You know, I hope she does, just because – I don't like any record to be, oh, no one ever is going to reach that record. You know, it's nice that there's still a challenge for this. And I remember so clearly 4 years ago with the qualifying in Vancouver, at the time, Abby and Sink were very close together. Mm. And that was, I think they were just about to hit maybe like 135, 140, you know, so it was this kind of back and forth between Abby and Sink. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about the USA semifinal. They faced Trinidad, who was able to get out of the group. There was a little bit of question before their last group game against Guyana, especially since Guyana had, or Guyana, rather, had upset Guatemala. You know, so we thought Guyana might have the temerity and the momentum to come in and really give Trinidad a good game, especially when, you know, Trinidad was thrashed 6-0 by Canada and looked so demoralized. But they had the right game plan. They came out firing on all cylinders, and they were up 4-0 in 20 minutes. So that was
I mean, this is an odd little Trinidad team. You've talked a lot on this show about the struggles that program has gone through and its most recent issues with leaving Randy Waldron behind. But there's obviously talent there. I mean, Kenya Cordner is a really impressive goal scorer. And as regards their performance against the United States, yeah, this wasn't the tough, you know, nine players behind the ball, barely lose 1-0 in the last CONCACAF Women's Championship
right.
a couple of years ago. This was a healthy U.S. blowout. But the first 20-25 minutes, Kenya Cordner was literally everywhere on the field. I think she was harassing any time a U.S. player touched the ball, Kenya Cordner was there to harass them. That kind of energy, that kind of, one might say, lack of defensive discipline, but just that hunger to just go out and pressure the ball wherever it ends up is cool. This, you know, if only this program could just get a little bit more money into its coffers and a little bit more infrastructure stability, it would be a contender in this confederation. But you know, that opening 20-25 minutes of that first half against the U.S., I thought they looked good.
Yeah, they definitely have so much talent, but it's the situation where without regular training, you know, you never get to make the whole greater than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. You know, the head coach pointed out that the entire team wasn't even in Houston until 2 days before the tournament started. The only warm-up match they had in 2016 for this tournament was against a youth team in Houston. You know, mm-hmm. so that's where that's you were saying, you know, the stability and the extra funding, that's where it makes a difference. And it is hard to watch when these aren't, you know, the really young players that we're seeing, like, you know, Costa Rica, that even if they're not being paid, they're getting like some regular league play at home in Costa Rica. You know, Trinidad started a little women's league last summer. It lasted, you know, a brief period. I think it was just supposed to be like a 6-week run. You know, now their coach is talking about that he kind of wants to treat the national team as its own team and get it games regularly because, you know, the women's league that they did was just not, the competition level was not strong enough for what he needs, you know, these players to get. So, you know, valiant effort, you know, by them. And of course, Kamika Ford's had some great saves, but when, you know, the U.S. women's national team is just ramming it down the middle of the field over and over, you know, eventually it's going to, you know, it's going to turn. So of course, USA qualifying, what is this going to be? 6 Olympics now? Yeah, that'll be the 6th Olympic tournament. And then, you know, Canada beating Costa Rica 3-1. So USA and Canada going off to the Olympics. It's interesting to point out, it's almost always been USA-Canada since it's been 2 slots, except for 2004, when Mexico upset Canada to clinch a berth for the 2004 Olympics. And what's interesting to me about that, and I want to use this as a point to show how Canada is so much more stable now, that tournament was February 2004. It was 5 months, just 5 months after Canada had made the semifinals of the Women's World Cup for the first time ever. You know, so it's like here you had this program better than it ever had been before, and 5 months later it loses to Mexico.
Yeah.
That hadn't even qualified for the Women's World Cup. So sure, Canada might not still be up at US's level, but it's not the which Canada are we going to get today kind of team that it was then. It's still not as consistent as US, but it's so much more consistent that it's clearly way ahead of everybody else in CONCACAF except for the US.
Oh, sure. I mean, and we saw that in the final,
yeah.
Especially in the first half. They really gave the U.S. a game. And listening to John Herdman's post-match comments when he said the idea was to keep the, as he called them, the flair players, Christine Sinclair, Diana Matheson, and Sophie Schmidt on the bench until about the 60th minute and give the younger kids a run out at the top of the formation, demonstrates that, it didn't work out for them in that particular game. The Canadian national team has real depth now, and they have an infrastructure in place where they can legitimately develop younger players, which we can see with teenagers like Jessie Fleming and Deanne Rose. We can see it with Kadisha Buchanan more or less inserting herself as the one of the starting center backs of the team. It's very heartening that you don't have to feel like your veterans have to be thrown out in the starting 11 every single game. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. that's cool. It's yeah. A bummer that it didn't quite come off for them on Sunday, but to see them very aggressively pressuring the United States, especially in the opening 15 minutes, really keeping the U.S. pinned back and, you know, making Lindsey Horan have to think once or twice more than she probably would when she got the ball, was very commendable.
And I think it must be challenging for both USA and Canada that you have these group games that don't necessarily prepare you for the intensity of the later games. Obviously, U.S. didn't have to, you know, worry too much about what was going to happen in the semifinal the way Canada did, but it's just, you know, this is why, you know, I want to keep pushing for more development in CONCACAF so you don't have these group games that just, you know, what is that really doing?
Sure. I mean, well, when CONCACAF becomes an actual confederation again, then we can talk about that.
Right. Good point. Good point.
But as far as the U.S. is concerned, I don't know how you felt, Jen, and you were certainly in the media rooms during the tournament, whereas I was not. But in addition to the play that we saw on the field and the players that we saw on the field,
mm-hmm.
also off the field, this really is starting to feel like a different team than it was a year ago. I remember last week when they barely pulled out a win against Mexico, which was not a great performance by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, Mexico defended like heroes during that match. But listening to some of the comments that Jill Ellis and the players made after the game, where it felt like night and day compared to some of the things that they said after, say, losing to France last year, or some of the tough performances that we saw during the group stage of the World Cup. There seems to be less delusion about how they're actually approaching their performances. You know, Carly Lloyd and Jill Ellis both, I think, said, like, yeah, it wasn't good enough against Mexico. We weren't moving the ball around quickly as we like. We were giving it up in central areas way too much. The kind of thing that was afflicting them a year before in the lead up to the World Cup. But the language was always like, yeah, we're getting there. We're kind of piecing it together, you know. We got to grow into the tournament. It was all this language that was
strange. Forcing
positivity where obviously the reality didn't match up.
Right.
And that's not how these guys are talking about it.
Well, and now the burden's off, you know, off their shoulders, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, going back to the firing of Tom Sormani, it was clear when you brought in Jill Ellis, it's like, okay, you have to win and you have to win with these players. And
right.
Now she won. A lot of players have moved on. Now right. They have freedom that they haven't had in a long time.
And even like, I don't ever remember, like, every goal that the U.S. scored last year up until maybe like the semifinal, I just remember in friendlies and in those group stage and early knockout rounds, anytime the camera would cut to Jill Ellis's reaction, it was so subdued, you know, almost placid. Even for, you know, goals in, you know, against Colombia or China during the knockout rounds, she was just very like, okay, that happened, now on to the next. In this tournament, even against opponents like Puerto Rico, every time the camera would show Jill reacting to a goal, she's jumping out of her seat. She's beaming from ear to ear. There just seems to be like an energy to Jill Ellis in the technical area that I don't think was there last year.
And that's a really good point, because so in the post-game press conferences, you know, I went to the ones for World Cup qualifying, you know, one in the Victor Tour, saw almost all of them for the Women's World Cup. She does have a different energy. She seems more comfortable than all of those other press conferences in terms of being a little bit more honest about what's going on and what's not working.
Yeah, and you alluded to it earlier, you know, when she was hired, she was supposed to win the World Cup and win it with a certain group of players, and now that championship has been won, those players have moved on. This is starting to feel more and more like her team. You know, the idea, now granted, there are going to be certain players that we all expected were going to get worked into the setup, like Lindsey Horan. Like, we wondered if maybe we'd start to see Mallory Pugh a little bit more.
Right. But
the idea that you would call in Stephanie McCaffrey and give her a lot of minutes, or that Mallory Pugh started three games, you know, she started the semifinal, the most important match of this tournament, and she started the final, which is, if you think about it, probably the most meaningless competitive women's soccer match of the quadrennium.
Right.
But that being said, it's against top competition, which Pugh hadn't faced before. It's against Canada, who is your biggest local rival, which means it doesn't matter if it's meaningless. There's going to be bragging rights at stake. And you're throwing in a 17-year-old kid as in the starting 11, who, by the way, had a great game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That seems to be – there just seems to be the sense that Ellis is holding the reins a little bit more than she used to.
Well, let me play devil's advocate and say, if you're Ellis, and you're bringing in some young ones and you're resting some, why do you start Carly Lloyd every single match in this tournament?
I don't know. I mean, that doesn't really bother me so much.
I don't know.
She's Carly Lloyd. You know, like
says Evan, the fangirl.
I mean, but at the end of the day, I mean, it is still a competitive tournament. You got to make sure that you qualify for the Olympics. I mean, granted, you're the U.S., and so it's. Might be a foregone conclusion, but she's your cat. She's your co-captain,
right? But even against Puerto Rico, if I take her out of one match, I take her out of that one, especially when it's less than 48 hours after the previous one.
Maybe I don't know. For that, just that decision just didn't really bother me that much, because you kind of I've been sensing that Jill is really getting close to knowing exactly what her best 11 is.
Uh-huh.
And she probably wants to see what that best 11 looks like as, you know, working together as often as she can. That's speculation, and it can be argued if Lloyd is part of that best 11. I think that she is.
Right.
But I think that's all what it comes down to. And these 20 players that were on this qualifying roster have been, you know, in the setup at least since October of last year.
Right.
So, you know, it's not as if she needs to get one more look at Stephanie McCaffrey to know exactly what Stephanie McCaffrey is capable of. You could potentially make, you know, the argument that you should throw out all the kids against Canada, because that's the real game. That's going to be the real tough opponent to see how they stack up. Yeah, I could see you maybe wanting to do that.
I liked, though, that the starting lineup from Friday to Sunday was the same, because
that says
that it's like, hey, let's see how this 11 works against different opponents.
Absolutely. And you want to, you know, it's clear that Morgan Bryan and Lindsey Horan, you want them to be your central midfield partnership going forward. You want to make sure that Horan gets as much time in that position so she can work out some of the positional and defensive kinks that I think she still needs to work out a little bit. There were a couple of times where, I mean, her vision and her intelligence take her pretty far, but you know, at the same time, she still needs to know when to, you know, show to the ball or drop off or, you know, hold on to the ball when she's in traffic or when to let it loose at the right time.
What did you think about Morgan Bryan getting the Golden Ball Award for the
tournament? Completely agreed with that decision. Morgan Bryan is unbelievable. I mean, especially in that Canada game, the way that she was able to break up play, hold the ball when she needed to in order to make the perfect pass. She's the linchpin of the team. Everything kind of runs through her now when you're building out. A couple of times where she would just juke Canadian defenders coming at her and just make them look foolish. It's mind-blowing. I mean, she's the Xavi of this team. She's pulling all the strings. I really can't say enough about how much Morgan Bryan means to this team. I mean, we already knew going into this based on what she did in the World Cup last year. But, you know, she's the one that is, got her hand at the till when she's on the field. She had a great tournament.
And I was just so pleased that whoever made the decision that she got it was looking at that and not necessarily giving it to someone who had scored, a winning goal or the most goals or something like that.
Yeah.
But
just don't. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but speaking of goals, Tobin Heath. Tobin Heath, Friday and Sunday.
She got a couple of good ones.
Yeah, those were awesome.
The one against Canada, I don't want to get it. Part of it was that Canada just completely left her in acres of space where there wasn't much of a contest. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's clear that Tobin's probably going to get a lot more playing time because Jill doesn't have Megan Rapinoe to lean on as a left-sided attacking threat. Everybody's opinion is divided about the value that Tobin ultimately brings, but if that's the thing that you need, then, you know, we're going to see a lot of Tobin this summer.
Well, and who do you think we're going to see added to the roster for the She Believes Cup? They had already mentioned that would be a larger roster. I would guess it would be 23 or 24 as opposed to the 20 that came into CONCACAF. So I'm thinking, we see the return of Heo, we see the return of Engen, maybe a fourth keeper and someone else?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm not so sure about a fourth keeper because it seems pretty clear that Jill wants Alyssa Nair as the backup in Rio, and that Aris is going to be the alternate.
Right.
So I'm not sure if she needs to look at anybody else. I think Hale is probably going to come back. Engen might come back. Maybe get another look at Daniel Colaprico, who saw some time during the victory tour. Beyond that, I'm sure she probably doesn't think she needs to expand the player pool any further than it is now.
Now, we did ask her in the press conference last night, Hal asked her, you know, what about the NWSL season? Will you be looking at that? And she said, that she had told the players that those NWSL minutes count and that she will be looking at those games. And she specifically said she was already planning her scouting schedule now that the NWSL schedule had been released.
So I saw that quote last night. Think about that quote and what a paradigm shift that quote really is.
Yes.
Because this is not something that she gave any pretense of caring about in 2014 and 2015. Now you could argue maybe she couldn't or things were too far down the road because she had a year to try and piece everything together and the politics of player selection for that tournament prevented her from doing that. But she also never made any public statements about this ever being important to her, you know, looking at club play. For her to say that, essentially she's saying, I am like every other national team coach in the world. Every week I will be at an NWSL game scouting players, seeing how they're doing, so I can make the best decision of who I select for the final tournament. That is mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing, considering the history of this women's national team program and how they treat club play. Right. I mean, granted, it's only going to take you so far because there's 24 people under contract right now with the U.S. Women's National Team. So it's only going to be 20 of those 24. Okay, fine. But the idea that it's not just how do you do when we all get together for camp that counts, we're actually going to see how you perform in competitive environments week in and week out is just, I mean, I think I made like a little yelp of joy when I saw it, because it's also so important for the league to recognize its place in this, in that, you know, you're developing not only the players who are under contract with the national team now, but you're giving really important high competitive minutes to players who should be getting a look in. And Jill is now going to be able to see on a regular basis, and maybe when the next contract cycle comes up after the Olympics, might be worth bringing into camp.
Well, and sending the message to the existing players on contract, you know, when she says NWSL minutes count, that means
we're not safe.
Yeah, if you're not a starter on your club team, why should I have you on the national team?
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Well, Evan, thank you so much for all of your insight and comments, and of course, as always, I know we'll be talking again. But I'm going to make you answer one last question.
Uh-oh.
Who's going to win the Olympics? Oh, I shouldn't make you ask that, because we still don't know the last three teams. So I'm going to ask you this instead.
Okay.
The four European teams that are going for the playoff spot, Norway, Netherlands, Switzerland, Sweden, who's going to get the one European spot?
I loved the Netherlands before the World Cup. I loved the Netherlands during the World Cup, even though they didn't really bring it at their top level. I want to say the Netherlands, but I actually think it's going to be Norway.
I'm leaning towards Norway too. They've got the depth. They had a great World Cup. Netherlands, the only edge they might have is that they're hosting the playoff tournament. But yeah, my money's on Norway.
Norway. I mean, we all know that the Swedish program is very sadly in decline, and Switzerland beyond their top two, I don't really know if they have the depth.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be Norway.
And hopefully we can watch those games. But anyway, we'll be talking to you soon, Evan.
Thank you so much, Jen.
All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper here with the Kaiser of not only Houston soccer, but women's soccer, Hal Kaiser. Hal, thanks for joining me. I know we haven't seen each other in a long time, clearly.
Yeah, it's been almost like, I don't know, 8 hours? somewhere in that range.
I was talking to Evan earlier about how it's like, you know, I can't believe it's over. And Evan's like, yeah, I can believe it's over. And I think what we were at 9 live matches in 10 days?
In 10 or 11 days, yeah.
10 or 11 days at BBVA.
And I think over that 11 days, I may have seen you more than I saw my own wife. So
Probably. And I
so
was
it's
talking
good to have it over
to,
with.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the operations people in the back of the house last night, and I said, you know, how's it been going? You know, I'm sure you're exhausted. And she had a great smile on her face, and she just said, I'm just ready for them to leave. Yeah, she had a very professional smile. She wasn't getting, you know, but it's just like, if think about it, most events come in and come out like really quickly, you know, but it's like having house guests for 15 days. I can't imagine what it must be like for those people. But anyway, for us, you know, a great tournament. Hal and I, of course, not going to get into it. We're going to get into the other news that's come out recently. Finally, we have the 2016 NWSL schedule. We know it's happening. This is a point that even WPS didn't reach in its very brief short season. The schedule is out. So initial thoughts on that schedule when you saw the dates and the makeup.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of knew some of what was coming already anyway. But I think the big thing is the fact that they are taking the entire Olympic tournament off. I'm trying to remember the exact dates. They're taking off from like July 27th to August
30th or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, that's huge. So that'll mean that unlike last year where there were a lot of games being played, not only when players were in camps, national team camps, but also while they were at the World Cup, you won't have as much of that this year. There's still probably going to be some time period where players will be out for camps. But, you know, how much is that? I don't know, 1-2 games, whatever. Certainly not 8 games or 8 to 10 games like it was last year.
Right.
So that's great for the league.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we don't know yet at what point they'll be pulled from the schedule, but it won't be anywhere near the impact, you know, that we saw with 2015.
Yeah, and I guess for each team, how long their break is depends on the scheduling, but the league itself is off from August 1st to August 25th. So, you know, that's great. And then also not planning any match dates during FIFA windows at all. Right. Is another big plus.
So if you look at the schedule now and you see gaps, you can know, hey, that's a FIFA window. So invariably international matches of some type will be played in that gap. Like I know Dash have a gap between like May 27th and June 12th. So I'm like, okay, there's got to be a friendly in there.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So I think net, it's a big plus. I mean, the one surprise that was sprung on us all is, you know, we were expecting a 20-game schedule, which we got. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's 10 teams in the league, so if you're playing each team twice, that's 18 games. You have two extra games. You would have thought, based on the way they've done it in the past, that you'd play two teams three times and figure probably somebody nearby. So if you're Houston, for example, maybe one game against Kansas City and one game against Orlando. But what they opted to do is double up one opponent. So everybody plays one team four times and the other team's twice, which is kind of an interesting way to go. I mean, I guess it has the – and it's basically whatever team is closest to you. And so for – you look at like Portland and Seattle, that makes for a really compelling four-game set between two teams that both should be pretty competitive this year,
for TV.
Yeah, and who already have a nice budding rivalry, so that will just stoke that rivalry a little bit more. And you know, really, if you look around, besides that rivalry, there really aren't any. And maybe Kansas City, Seattle, just based on being in the finals the last 2 years,
right?
There really aren't any other big rivalries per se. So it'll be interesting to see if any new rivalries come out of this. Playing one team four times, you know, I think it's maybe partly that. It's probably partly also to cut down on travel expenses as well.
Right. Yeah. And that's good to have a practical element like that. And I would think too that making sure that, you know, nobody has to go, no single team has to go to Seattle more than once, has to cross the country to get to Seattle. You know, Portland, they're right there. So no one has to make that trip twice, which, you know, we've seen the Dash have to do. And that's when you have, it's still a somewhat compressed schedule, not nearly like it was, but it's like that adds another day of travel and, you know, potential loss of competitiveness, depending on, you know, who's traveling the most days. I know in MLS, they have a very complicated formula when they're planning the schedule to make sure that no team is traveling more than anybody else. You know, it's not just how often games are played, but the travel related to those games. So I feel like they've learned a lot from the last couple of seasons and have tried to put, you know, all of that into this schedule.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see if you did have, I mean, if it hadn't been Orlando that had joined the league and it had been San Jose, let's say, mm-hmm. You know, maybe then, rather than playing one team four times, it's playing two teams three times because there is less of a travel issue. Because I suspect, like you say, it's a lot of it has to do with those two teams being so far away from everybody else. But I guess the other nice thing looking at the schedule, and this we got this last year as well too, is midweek games are really at a minimum. There's only eight across the entire league. There's only eight midweek games. Most games are Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Which is great because those midweek games outside of Portland, those midweek games are really tough to get people to come to, to sell and get them to come to.
And it did look like that, there's a little bit of backloading, you know, post Olympics. And of course, I think that's coming from taking the month of, you know, August off for the Olympics. You know, like I look at Dash schedules and right after the Olympics, it seems like they have two games in 1 week, and then again, two games in 1 week. But the balance of the schedule, you know, looks pretty fair overall.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think they space things out pretty well. It's certainly nothing like what it was in 2014, where that was, I think, maybe 2014 was one of your worst case scenario kind of schedules.
Yeah, especially when, you know, originally it was going to be just 8 teams again, you know, and an even number of teams make mixing so much easier. So you throw in that 9th team, you know, very late in the game and decide to go to a full 24-game schedule without increasing the length of the season. That was crazy. But here, so now we've got more time for the season, just 20 games, and finally 10 teams. So not having to have a bye week, you know, I love that there are opening weekend every team will play. You know, you don't have to balance because you have an odd number of teams where it's, okay, this team's off, then this team's off, and, you know, that can be really challenging to schedule with.
Yeah, that's so nice to have that. It also makes it, for those who play NWSL Fantasy League like I do, it makes it a lot easier because you're not having to think about which team is it that's off this week and messing around with picking your team each week based on that. So it's hopefully from here. I mean, I know Jeff Plush at the draft, or maybe it was prior to the draft, said ideally expansion from here when they're adding teams, it's adding 2 teams at once so that they don't have an uneven number of teams and the unbalanced schedule issue.
Right.
We'll see how practical that is over time. That right. comes with its own set of issues, of course. But it's nice to have an even number of teams for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's nice to be aware of that this far out because, you know, we saw MLS go through that, you know, occasionally adding one. And that's always such a challenge, especially when you're doing the conference thing of, wait, this conference has 10 teams and this has 9. So, you know, definitely moving forward there and doing the pairs as well. Now, we heard a really interesting rumor this morning. Not a big surprise, but it sounds like that Houston and BBVA Compass Stadium will be the host for the 2016 NWSL final.
Yeah, so it seems. It's, I mean, unconfirmed at this point. It started out on Reddit, apparently, and then hit Twitter that someone had talked to a Dash ticket rep, and the ticket rep had said that Houston was going to be the host, and, you know, the rights to buy tickets for your season ticket seats are included in your season ticket package. Which I suspect that ticket rep wasn't supposed to be saying that. it's always nice when ticket reps break news. But,
or somebody on Reddit made up a really good story because that's totally believable too.
It could be that. Yeah, I think once it became clear or known that Orlando's new stadium was postponed into next season, I think Houston became the obvious choice. It was probably already the obvious choice.
Right. Really, but the only other place you could have it would be Kansas City or Chicago, assuming those venues were available.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to figure, I mean, I would bet Houston this year, Orlando next year.
Right.
And then we'll see from there.
Yeah. And I'm very happy with the you know, predetermined venue. It's not really fair to call it a neutral venue because the home team does have a shot to get there. But, you know, much like the Super Bowl situation where, hey, this is where it's going to be. Everybody can plan. You can do a lot of events around it, you know, organize to have merch for sale, that kind of thing. It was so great being in Portland last October and having so many more people there. I mean, for us on the media side that, you know, that you could plan in advance and that Nike could do that trip for us to go, you know, visit Nike headquarters and, you know, those kind of things. But speaking of events, one of the things I'm excited about, if it is true that Houston would be hosting the final, is that you and I would be able to host WOSOCO 2.0. Yeah. For those who may not be aware, even though I've been talking about it a lot, we had a little women's soccer conference last Saturday between the semifinals and the final for CONCACAF. Great first start for this event. You know, I did a presentation on the history of the U.S. Women's National Team. Hal, you had a great presentation on if you were the owner of an expansion team for NWSL, how you'd put the team together. I loved it. It was called Powerball FC. And then, of course, we had Haley Carter, Kaylee Ojai, Monica Gonzalez, you know, talk as well. So, you know, to all the WOSO fans out there, you know, go ahead, look at your calendar for October. I'm guessing that final, Hal, will probably be a weeknight again somewhere.
I don't know. We'll see. I think hopefully it will be announced in the not-so-distant future. What day of the week it is depends on what the broadcast schedule looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the nice thing about planning it this now, you know, so far ahead of time is is, you know, broadcast schedules aren't set for October necessarily, so maybe right. this time they can get it on a weekend, which would be right. preferable, of course. But I agree with you. I thought, you know, it felt like an event in Portland, and I know talking with Jeff Plush after the draft that the intent for this year is to make it even more so, have more events built around it and really turn it into one of those, you know, one or two chances that you get a year to pull lots of people associated with the women's soccer world together in one place. I mean, the other one right. being the NSCAA convention with the draft.
Right. And hopefully that they'd be able to have more things to sell. I mean, even with the CONCACAF tournament this past week, you know, they had a decent arrangement of merchandise, you know, all teams represented, which was great. You know, so if you wanted a Guatemala flag, you could buy that, or, you know, a Canada scarf. I was just still a little disappointed that there wasn't a program to buy, or at the very least, just a colored piece of paper that had the rosters on it. You know, I like that the NWSL final in Portland, at least, they had, here's a formal program, nothing big, but it's like, you know, it's a commemorative thing. It's got the lineups, you know, that there's merchandise opportunities, but also, you know, revenue opportunities for the teams and the league themselves, you know. And and back to the events, like you said, that we can bring a lot of people together. You know, that's kind of what I was hoping to do with WOSOCO. I was hoping more people would travel into Houston, but of course, you know, with so many U.S. games, I think one of the things that, you know, impacted a little bit was, you know, it's like there's been a lot of games in the area for the U.S. I think a lot of people kind of blew their budget on the Victory Tour, and now you've got She Believes coming up. But our goal, you know, of course, so for October, whenever this match ends up, and I'd guess it'd be somewhere around mid-October, is that we could do another WOSOCO in conjunction with anything that the NWSL, you know, is doing. And just like we did this past weekend, we had, you know, an open party at the Phoenix, and it was great to see a lot of people who had traveled for the matches at BBVA to come in and come to the party and bond with American Outlaws who came as well. It's like to keep doing more things like that. So, you know, if you don't like the predetermined venue for the final, you know, I'm going to try to understand, but keep in mind that it lets us grow the game. You know, I miss MLS not having a predetermined site, because you used to be able to, all the supporters groups would have a little convention around the MLS Cup date because they knew months in advance when it was. You know, I flew into LA in 2011 for the cup, and it was like at the airport, at the hotel, it was branded. They were giving away, you know, pint glasses that said MLS Cup. You can't do that when the site is determined just, you know, to
like a week at a time.
Yeah. So any big matchups that you think early in the season are going to be most exciting to watch for fans?
Well, you know, I'm kind of biased, of course, being a Houstonian.
Right.
Being here with the Dash. I think the Houston-Chicago Red Stars match to open up the season, the first game, is going to be really interesting. I mean, Chicago made the playoffs last year. I think they've done a lot of good things with their team this year to build it even further. Houston has been doing some good things after a rough start to the preseason. I think they'll have a pretty decent little team, so that'll be an interesting matchup. And then the day after that, you have Alex Morgan going back to Portland with Orlando. So that should be a fun one to see. Especially, I mean, for a couple of reasons. I mean, not just that angle of it, but also the brand new rebuilt Portland team and see how they do. You know, apart from that, I mean, in April, early season, the 23rd FC Kansas City against Portland is interesting for some of the same reasons, seeing how Portland fares, but also seeing how Kansas City, after having lost so much,
right, a very how they look this squad. Season.
Yeah, and I, you know, Orlando's home opener will be interesting to watch, just from the standpoint of seeing how well supported they are, and the sense I get is they're going to be very, very well supported. I'm hearing over 5,000 season tickets sold now. You know, will they reach the levels of Portland? Probably not, but will they look a lot better than Houston has done from an attendance standpoint? Probably, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say any Portland Seattle game is going to be worth watching. Doesn't matter what time of the season it is, that's going to be worth watching.
Yeah, that's just a given. I'm really looking forward to the fact that with the She Believes Cup being in the U.S. And then the U.S. having their April friendlies again here, they're not going anywhere. The U.S. players will be able to join, you know, their teams for preseason.
Yeah.
And have it almost completely interrupted. They'll have that little segment at the end where they go off and play, but they should be so much more available for preseason since they're not doing the Algarve Cup and since the season is starting later than what we had last season. And then, of course, too, with the Olympics, you know, starting basically 2 months later than when the World Cup had started last summer, you've got a much better stretch, I think, for all these teams to come together and hopefully for the league and the clubs to capitalize also off of, you know, the momentum that has, for the most part, continued from the Women's World Cup win.
Yeah, that fact that the national team players will be in training during the preseason for most of it, that is really huge. I mean, last year you had players jetting in a couple days before the season started, and, you know, to different effects. I mean, some of them blended in pretty quickly with their teams, others it was a little more rough looking. So having those players the whole preseason, most of the preseason training with their teams, it's just going to make for better quality of soccer when the season does actually get going.
And I'm assuming with that what looks like a FIFA break for late May, early June, that I would assume that right after those games, we would likely get an announcement of here's the Olympic roster, which is still like, you know, 2 months before the Olympics start. But I can't imagine, given that, Jill announced it pretty early last time, you know, and so teams can, of course, plan. You know, I would think that we probably know mid-June, you know, who's on the Olympic roster, and that, you know, then maybe they disappear early July.
Just a pure guess. Yeah, it sounds like a reasonable guess to me. We'll see. I hope that they don't need anywhere near as long a camp this year as they did during the World Cup, that they're much more sensitive towards NWSL and the fact that it's kind of mid-season at that point.
Right.
And that maybe those players getting match play mid-season with their NWSL teams is a more effective use of their time and training than pulling everybody together for a training camp to just train with themselves.
Right. And hopefully, post-Olympics, as much as we want the U.S. women to win, we don't want them to necessarily have another 10-game victory tour that then impedes upon, you know, the flow of the players coming back, you know, into league play.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully with the Olympics, I mean, the nice thing with the Olympics at least is that it's not just soccer. There's all these other things going on. So the attention tends to be spread out around multiple athletes.
Right.
So hopefully it's not, I mean, even if they do win, hopefully it's nothing like, I mean, it shouldn't be anything like what the World Cup was.
Right.
And so of course
they would still get some kind of tour. I mean, that's where U.S. soccer makes its money. That's where the players make their money, you know. But I just hope that the entities can really work together. So maybe the victory tour is a November and December thing, or whatever celebration tour, fan tour, whatever they end up calling it, you know, that it doesn't work against the playoffs as much.
Yeah, you would hope that after the difficulties of this past season and NWSL and its coaches expressing certain amount of dissatisfaction with U.S. soccer and how this was all handled, that a lot of that has taken to heart,
right,
and smart decisions are made. And the other thing is, let's be honest, I mean, 10 victory tour games and then more friendlies after that and then CONCACAF Olympic qualifying and then She Believes Cup and more. There is a risk that you oversaturate the market from the standpoint of the number of games that you're playing, and whether or not kind of the drop off in attendance over the latter part of the victory tour had anything to do with that, who knows? But you know, hopefully they don't go for overkill.
Yeah, and historically we've seen the later games. I mean, if you look back at previous, you know, post Olympic tours, the crowds do get smaller. You know, December is always tough. I would say the exception to that this past December, well, when you've announced that Abby Wambach's last game is in New Orleans, you know, it seemed like everybody kind of put their money on that one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, I'm definitely going to New Orleans in December, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But thank you so much, Hal, for, you know, chatting about this. And of course, I have to give a big shout out to Hal for all of his coverage during the CONCACAF tournament. I was doing the fun stuff. Hal was doing the hard stuff. And Hal, of course, yeah, and of course, Hal almost had a perfect record of every pregame press conference attended, I think.
And postgame, yeah.
Yeah, I think you just, the only ones you missed were the Saturday ones for U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, right before the final, I had a perfect game going right up until the ninth inning, and then, you know, oh well, that's how it goes.
All right, so if anybody wants to see any of Hal's writing or any of the photos or videos we did or any of my, you know, things from my stat vault, they're all on keepernotes.com. We hope you guys all check it out. And, of course, Hal and I will be back, of course, you know, on the Keeper Notes live show on a regular basis, so you can always listen to us talk WOSO.
All right, time to wrap it up with the back four. First, an Olympic qualifying update. So, of course, the U.S. and Canada will be the two CONCACAF representatives for this summer's Olympics. So just three spots remain in the 12-team field for the tournament. The final round of Asian qualifying kicks off Monday in Japan. There are six teams competing for two spots. And each of those teams is going to have to play five games in 11 days. Hal Kaiser will be providing as much coverage of the Asian qualifiers as he can. He might even be in Japan, so that would be great. He'd be able to see some of those games. Now, the format for the UEFA playoff is a little simpler. Four teams are competing for the last European spot, with the Netherlands hosting Norway, Switzerland, and Sweden in a round-robin tournament. The winner will be determined by most points earned, followed by tiebreaker of goal differential, then total goals scored if necessary. So we'll know by Monday, March 9th, who the remaining three Olympic teams are. And the draw for the Olympic tournament will be held probably March or April. Next, the NWSL final. As Hal and I mentioned earlier, we've heard unconfirmed reports that the 2016 NWSL championship match will be played at BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston this fall. Looking at the FIFA women's calendar, it's likely that this match would fall between October 9th and 16th. Of course, this is all speculation. If Houston is confirmed as host for the NWSL final, I will definitely be hosting WOSOCO 2.0 along with Hal Kaiser. And, of course, a big shout-out to all those who attended the first WOSOCO last weekend. Next up for the U.S. national team, the She Believes Cup. The team will play England in Tampa on March 3rd, then France on March 6th in Nashville, and finally Germany on March 9th in Boca Raton. You can get ticket and TV info at ussoccer.com. All the USA games will be shown on either Fox Sports 1 or ESPN 3. And note that this roster will be larger than that for the CONCACAF tournament, so we should see the return of Heather O'Reilly, Whitney Engen, and a few other players that weren't on the February roster. Last, kit notes. My store can create NWSL team jackets, polos, and cinch sacks, and probably goalkeeper jerseys too, once we know what the new goalkeeper jersey looks like for NWSL. We will be carrying the new USA Home and Away three-star jerseys later this spring. They're due in late March, early April, and these new kits should have the FIFA Women's World Cup Champions patch on them, but the patch will only be on the women's cut jersey. Also, I have just a couple of 2015 three-star goalkeeper jerseys left. Reach out to me if you're interested in one of those, and there will be a new goalkeeper kit this spring. As always, just email jen@soccerforall.com with any and all merch questions, and that is the number 4 in the middle of soccerforall.com. All right, don't forget you can subscribe to the Mix Zone via iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, TuneIn. You can also find it at HowlerMagazine.com. If you like what you're hearing, please tell other people about this podcast. And as always, thanks to PK Ray for making this podcast possible.